As I understand it, this meeting is really about the performance plan. And the agenda is in front of all of us. I guess what we should just briefly just find out is whether there are any apologies.
Good morning. These apologies from Ms. Ntembo, Nkosi Qebekulu, and Mr. Talisa.
So welcome everybody, especially the minister and the deputy minister. It may be a good idea, minister, on your part, just to indicate how do you intend managing your own presentations. This meeting in the main is about those presentations.
Thank you very much, Chair of the Committee, for this moment. Honorable Member Masondo, maybe I should start by indicating that as a COPTER, we are very, very grateful, and we want to thank the Portfolio Committee for giving us an opportunity to come and share with yourselves our 2015 to 2020 revised strategic plans, as well as about to begin financial year annual performance plans of our family, which is comprised of two departments, of course, and our support agency called MISA. We are very grateful for the opportunity accorded to us. I must indicate, Chair, that our presentation is divided into three parts, covering the three cited divisions, which is the Department of Corporative Governance, DCOG, the Department of Traditional Affairs, DTA, as well as MISA, and they will be dealt with respectively by our DG. And that the Noila. As requested by the committee chair, I must indicate that the focus of our presentations are the revised 2015-2016-2020 strat plan, as well as the 2017-18 annual performance plan of the three institutions. I must indicate, Chair, that all the presentation will highlight our outcome-oriented goals and strategic objectives in the revised 2015-2020 strat plan, but it will also indicate 2017-2018 annual targets and indicators, and we thought it's also important that they should also highlight the medium-term expenditure framework, indicative, of course, of budget allocation of each institution, very, very important in light of the current economic conditions. I must indicate Chair and the members of the committee that DCOG strategic and annual performance plans are as part of the package in Section A, and its MTF allocations are in Section B, and the MISA strategic and annual performance plans are in Section C, and its MTF allocations are in Section D, while DGA's strategic or strategic information is in Section A and F respectively. And in case of DCOG, I must indicate, Chair and the committee, that you requested, in fact, you requested that we should also give an indication on the your recommendations that was provided in the last sitting of the committee on key financial controls and performance information management. This was based on the 2015-2016 audit outcome, so we intend covering that too. Very important. Hence, in the presentation, our presentation includes a section on progress towards implementation of those committee recommendations. Now, the DG will present, I'm reliably informed that we'll do a joint presentation in the interest of time for both three institutions. But then, Chair, I must indicate that it's our expectation that besides noting, as it has been a norm, besides noting this particular presentation, we are requesting the portfolio committee also to provide further inputs on our revised threat plan, as well as the indicative budget allocations as cited in our presentation. Your inputs will be highly appreciated. Thank you very much. That's how we intend approaching this presentation.
Years ago, I used to belong to some organization, and they'll give us very bulky documents, and they speak when I was in the discussion at the time, they say, please refer to that document, page 56. Now please refer to the Euro documents, page 9. And please refer to, by the end of the day, you'll be a bit confused. Now, I just wanted to repeat, where is what? Is that what we're talking about? This way you find this, where you find that. Because we may not have received the documents at the same time. If you just repeat that.
I think as the presenter takes us through, he will definitely emphasize where to locate some of our presentation. Yes, thank you very much.
That's fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister, colleagues. I thought that perhaps, you know, just to introduce the officials that are accompanying the Minister and the Deputy Minister, I'll ask the officials to just wave your hands so that they see who you are. We have Mr. Fava, who is the DDG Corporate Services, and Mr. Fosi, who is DDG Local Government Support and Intervention Management. We have Ms. Twane, who is Acting DDG Institutional Development, and we have Dr. Tao, who is DDG National Disaster Management Center. We have Mrs. Neyman, who is our CFO, and we have got Mr. Vimba, who is acting CEO of MISA. We have Ms. Tishi, who is CFO of MISA. Mr. Seroke, who is Chief Director, Infrastructure Development. We have Ms. Mkhaladi, who is Chief Director, Office of the DG in DTA. There she is. We have Mr. Nick Lukauka, Acting Head, Capacity Building, MISA. And we have got Mr. Victor Matayada, Chief Director in CEO's office. And we have Mr. C. T. Shaw, acting program manager, acting DDG in CWP. We have Mr. Pane, CFO of DTA, and we have Mrs. Gosnell, head of DG in DCOC, and lastly we have Mr. Whitley, chief of staff in the office of the minister, and Lebu Tekane, parliamentary officer, and Clifford Mukhajane is the parliamentary officer. Those are the officials that are with us here. We have submitted our presentation through our parliamentary officer, which covers the three areas as the minister has stated. It is one presentation divided into sections. And the first, each one of the presentation, the first part will be about the strategic plan and the APP and finance. And then the second part will also follow the same sequence in different, because it consists of different accounting officers. Yes. If we go to that slide there, that is section one. That is the first part, which is the DCOP part, which will look at, this is the presentation outline. It will deal with strategic overview, revised 2015-2020 strategic plan, performance plan, the budget as I've indicated, and progress and recommendations. Section two of the presentation will be municipal infrastructure support agents. It also has similar strategic overview programs, of the programs, the budget. And then lastly, we'll then have Department of Traditional Affairs, which will also have a similar outline. The purpose of this presentation is for the Portfolio Committee to note and provide inputs on the COPTA's revised 2015-2020 strategic plans, 2017-18 annual performance plans, and indicative budget allocations. And those are the departments that we have alluded to, and the MIS as well. Then that part, section one, we're starting with DCOC. The issues of the vision and mission, we have always been presenting that, but I just wanted to highlight the vision part, which talks about a functional and developmental local government system that delivers on its constitutional and legislative mandate within a system of cooperative governance. I thought that, you know, that is quite critical. And then the mission statement, the values, I would not dwell on that. I'll spend a bit of time on the goals. The first goal, there are eight strategic goals in GCOC. The first one is effective and efficient internal corporate governance processes and systems. And the second one is to foster the creation of a functional local government system through enhanced accountability and transparency. The third goal is to ensure significant improvements in service delivery through sound infrastructure management. The fourth goal, build institutional resilience and initiate the next phase of institution building. And the fifth goal is to lead and support the creation of prosperous cities and towns by restructuring the space economy. And the sixth goal, entrench a culture of good governance. The seventh one, coordinate effective integrated disaster management and fire services. The eighth goal, local public employment programs expanded through community work programs. Within those goals, we also have the maintenance and developmental agenda.
fixing what is broken and also looking at what needs to be done at that local government space. And in terms of the alignment of strategy to medium-term strategic framework, the medium-term strategic framework has taken its lead from the NDP. And as far as DCOG is concerned, we have outcome 9 of the medium-term strategic framework, which is a responsive, accountable, effective, and efficient developmental local government system. And we have sub-outcomes that we contribute towards. There are about 5 sub-outcomes. And the first one is members of society have sustainable and reliable access to basic services, which also links to back to basics, first pillar. Second sub-outcome, to strengthen intergovernmental arrangements for a functional system of cooperative governance for local government. The third, democratic, well-governed, and effective municipal institutions capable of carrying out their developmental mandate as per the constitution. And then, of course, the sound financial management, which is also the same as one of the pillars of back to basics. And lastly, the sub-outcome, local public employment programs through community work program. And I'll not dwell on the others, and I'll go straight to strategic objectives. We're drilling it close down to the operations at strategic objectives level. We have 12 strategic objectives. We had 8 goals. Now, 12 strategic objectives, and all our targets will be linked to each one of these strategic objectives. The first one is to improve DCOG governance processes and systems. The first one looks inwardly, which has to do with positioning ourselves as DCOG to be able to support the external stakeholders effectively. The second strategic objective is facilitate the restructuring of municipal space economy through integrated development planning and special targeting by March 2019. This is one of the developmental agenda on local government. The third strategic objective, create a conducive environment for business to thrive and stimulate local economies by March 2019. And the fourth strategic objective, implement initiatives to improve financial sustainability, revenue and debt management. The fifth one, support and strengthen the capacity of municipalities to deliver sustainable free basic services. The next one, number 6, deepening the relationship between citizens and local government. I'm going through all of them. I will not repeat them on the next slide when we link them with the targets and the key indicators. The seventh one, promote good governance through strengthening of anti-corruption measures in local government. The eighth one, strengthen the functionality of municipalities through the implementation of administrative and institutional systems. And the ninth one, improve the system of disaster management and fire services across government. And the tenth, improve the accountability for performance in the local government system through implementation of policies and programs. 11th, coordinate collaboration for infrastructure development at municipal level to extend services to unserved communities. And lastly, provide 1 million work opportunities through effective and efficient program management and strategic partnership by March 2020. Now I'm getting to the next part of the presentation, which is the revised 2015-2020 strategic plan, as well as 2017-18 annual performance plan. It is also, we've got a number of slides on that. I will not go through all of them. I'll just give highlights. The first part is the strategic goal 1. So we cover all the goals. I said there are 8 goals. We cover all of them. And the first one, we show the linkages of government plans and so on. So that goal one, we say the goal statement is by 2020, the department would have improved governance and financial management processes and systems for improved support departmental progress. And the linkage there, we're showing NDP objectives, which says a well-run and effectively coordinated state institutions with skilled public servants who are committed to the public good and capable of delivering consistently high quality services. And it also relates to a strategic objective which talks to improve DCOG governance processes and systems. And for the strategic plan for 2020 target is that final average MPET score maintained at 3, which is effective by 2020. So we're striving towards that. And then that was the strategic goal one. The strategic goal two, which is looking at accountable local government system. The first one was inward looking, and the second one, it's also showing those links across. The goal statement, the strategic goal two, which says foster the creation of a functional local government, then it has the goal statement there and so on. So I'm not going to go really through all of them because I've just demonstrated that we're trying to make those linkages as required by the Department of, DPME, planning, monitoring, and so on. You know, they have got a template that we all follow, and so on. So I'll not follow all of those. I just gave that example. I want to get to the annual performance plan because then it drills it much down to the 2017-2018, which is the coming financial year. I will spend a little bit of time on this one. The strategic objective one, which I read all those strategic objectives, which are 12. So the first one, it says, which is inward looking, it says final average MPET score maintained at 3 by 2020, and our target for 2017-2018, I'll stick to those columns. 2017-18, the target is final average MPET score improved from 2.7 in 2015 to 3 in 2018. And then we describe the target, you know, what it represents. It is intended to improve governance and financial management processes and systems, including audit outcomes. So it is only one target on administration in DCOG. And then we come to program two, which is regional and urban development and legislative support. On that, we have about two targets. And again, we have the strategic objective on the left hand, which is strategic objective number two, which is to facilitate the restructuring of municipal space, economy, and so on, which is outward looking. The column that says strategic plan 2020 targets. We are saying 6 partial contracts facilitated for key restructuring zones by 31st March 2019. And what is the target for 2017-18? We'll start with 2 special contracts facilitated for key restructuring by the end of the financial year 2017-18. And it speaks to, in terms of the description, sector plans and strategic investments are aligned to local special plans and priorities. The second strategic target under that objective, 50 intermediate cities supported on spatial and economic planning, implementation and governance as per the priorities identified And then we say, how many do we start with in 2017-18? We're going to start with 10 intermediate cities supported to improve spatial and economic planning implementation as per the priorities identified in the IUDF framework. This is intended to support the creation of more inclusive, resource-efficient, prosperous cities and towns. And the next one, which is the third strategic objective, is to create a conducive environment. And under that, we say 45 municipalities supported to implement red tape reduction initiatives in line with the National Red Tape Reduction Strategy. And how many municipalities in 2017-18 are we targeting? We're starting with 15. And the intention is to improve easy to do business with government by attending to regulations, bureaucratic procedures and processes, and so on. So I indicated that we have only two targets for the regional and urban development and legislative support. It is one of the programs that is dealing with the developmental agenda. And the next one, the next program is institutional development. And strategic objective 4 speaks to that program. And under strategic plan for 2020 targets, a municipal specific revenue plan implemented in 60 municipalities by 2030. We might have written 30, it's an error, it has got to be 60. That is by 2020. And we say, where do we begin in 2017-18? Say, a municipal specific revenue plan implemented in 30 municipalities by the end of the financial year 2017-2018. That's where we would begin. And the description, the intention is to reduce billing and revenue collection challenges experienced in municipalities, and the spin-offs of revenue collection, if it's done well, it also deals with the municipal debt and those sorts of things and so on. So in that sort of way, you know, if we do it successfully, it will help us in that regard. And the strategic target, the next one is 2,250 is an error. It has got to be 257 municipalities. We don't have 2,000 municipalities. It's just an error. There's 257 municipalities assessed pertaining to compliance with the rating aspects of Municipal Property Rate Act and so on. How many do we start with out of 257? We're starting with 110 municipalities assessed pertaining to this compliance with rating aspects by the end of this coming financial year. The purpose is actually to assist municipalities to value properties and impose property taxes to fund the provision of public goods. The next one, which is still institutional development and strategic objective number 6, which talks to deepening the relationship between citizens and local government. And we're talking about the strategic plan 2020 target, 4,392 ward committees, operational plans developed by 31st March 2019. And then what are we going to do in 2017-18? We're saying 4,392 ward committee operational plans developed by 31st March 2018. The purpose is to support the development of ward operational plans that include a range of activities to be executed in line with IDPs. And then the second strategic plan by 2020 is 200 municipalities supported to institutionalize community complaint management. And how many municipalities are we targeting in the next financial year? 80 municipalities supported to do that. That will have to include public participation and government affairs and build public trust. The strategic objective number 7, which talks about the promotion of good governance. We're saying that out of the training of local government anti-corruption strategy rolled out in 44 municipalities, we'll start with 18. And then the next one, speaks to still institutional development, 20 reports on number of appointments of senior managers concluded and corrective actions taken, and we're going to start with 4 in the next financial year. And the next one is 16 reports on corrective action taken against municipalities. We're also going to target 4 in this coming financial year. All in all, the targets of this institutional development are 7. So I'll go out of that to okay, the next one is local government support and intervention. It has only 2 targets, and strategic objective 10 and 11. It covers the 2 strategic objectives. And in terms of the strategic plan of 2020 targets, 4 reports on municipal progress with implementation of the Back to Basics program by 31st March 2020. And what are we targeting at? What are we looking at in this coming financial year? Report on municipal progress with the implementation of Back to Basics program by 31st March 2018. And the last target under local government support and intervention program is looking at coordination and collaboration for infrastructure development. So we're saying MIG, 183 MIG receiving municipalities monitored per annum for compliance with DORA. And how many are we starting with? We'll start with all of them, 183 in the coming financial year. And then the next one is community development work. Community work program. And it's strategic objective number 12, and it's the last one. The target of 1 million work opportunities provided by 31st March 2019, and we're saying how many are we targeting in 2017-18? We have 258,400 work opportunities provided, and then also 23,135 additional work opportunities. In terms of the performance indicator, we broke the indicators into 2 there. And then the next one is CWP sites in 212 municipalities. And this coming financial year, we're going to target exactly that number, 212 municipalities with CWP sites, etc. So the budget aspect, in terms of the budget, we have that slide there, which is showing the net decreases, the red on the left, 2017-18. In brackets, under the total there, it shows the net decrease of the budget. And you know, the other ones that are not red at the bottom under total, that shows the net increases and so on. So on that slide, what we're saying is that the net changes to the baseline amount, which reflects a decrease of 142.7 million in 2017-18 due to the budget cut, and the decrease will result in lower operational funding. However, in 2018-19 and 2019-20, there will be increases of 855.3 million and 896.3 million respectively. And this relates to grants. The next slide basically indicates allocations per program of all the programs that I've taken you through in terms of the strategic plan and APPs. And those are the allocations. And the last column there shows the average growth If we look at administration, by 2019-20, it would have increased by 6%. Regional and urban development, there will be a decrease by 28%, but the rest of them, they'll be showing, you know, all in all, it's 8% increase in terms of the fund. So we're saying the decrease of minus 28% in budget allocation of Program 2 is due to the phasing out of the demarcation transitional grant from 2018-2019. That's why it is that sort of dip. And the next slide is allocations per economic classification. It's a breakdown of compensation of employees, which is 338.9 million. And Department of Cooperative Governance, 295.6 million. And community work program, 43.2 million. And goods and services, you know, and so on. All in all, including the transfers and subsidies, we have the grand total of 78 billion, 78.4 billion. It will increase to 85.1 billion to 91.0 billion there. That is the 8% increase there. And this slide basically just shows allocations in terms of earmarked funds and special allocations, including operational funds for the department. And as we can see, we have municipal infrastructure grant, municipal assistance, the grants and so on, it constitutes 77.8 billion. But if we look at the operational budget for the department, in terms, breaking it down in terms of the programs, we have 514.9 million budget. And as I've indicated that, you know, in 2018-2019, it will slightly increase, and 2019-2020 increase as such. And that pie chart is a reflection of the stuff that I've already indicated. Oh, yes. And then the following slides, these are the issues that were raised previously by the Portfolio Committee. I wanted to request that I skip this and cover, maybe I'll come back to the issues that were raised so that I finish the strategic plans, APPs for the department. Chairperson, if that would be fine. I was saying that the next slide is talking about the recommendations that were raised by the Portfolio Committee previously. So we've got a couple of slides. Yes, a couple of slides. So I was just requesting that if there were questions on this, on DCOC, APP, strategic plan, and the finances, and or I present all of them, and the chair will guide.
I guess what we're trying to do is to allow you to finish and urge members to please note down the issues that they'd like to follow up on. And so that when we open up for discussion, questions, comments, and so on, you can refer us to the specific issues.
Thank you, Chairperson. We'll come back to the responses. I'm going to MISA. MISA is section 2 of the presentation, and then the presentation outline, vision and mission like the previous one, the mandate, organizational values, and then strategic goals and objectives. I'll do the same thing. I'll not spend much time on the vision, mission, mandate, because we report those annually, and then the programs and sub-programs. MISA has three programs, and the MTF budget will be the last part. And I'll just, you know, look at the vision only, which is to strive for sustainable municipal infrastructure and service delivery. And the organization values, yes, I will spend more time on this kind of slide, which speaks to strategic goals and objectives. MISA has about four strategic outcome-oriented goals. The first one is a refocusing. It's inward looking and also strengthening the capacity of MISA to be able to support externally effectively. Refocus and strengthen the capacity of MISA to deliver on its mandate. More work has been done in this regard to ensure that MISA is well positioned to support municipalities accordingly. Now, what are the strategic objectives? The strategic objective one is to improve the usefulness and reliability of performance information, to improve the effectiveness of internal controls, risk management and governance structures, provide effective and efficient corporate governance, financial and legal support, and the second one, at goal two, ensure significant improvement in civil service delivery through sound infrastructure management. And this is outward looking, you know, on this goal going downwards. It is to ensure significant improvements in service delivery through sound infrastructure management. And then the strategic objective 2.1, more effective support and interventions with greater impact on citizens' lives. The second strategic objective, improve technical capacity and enhance technical skills in municipalities. The third goal, which is to improve technical capabilities in identified municipalities for effective and efficient delivery and management of municipalities and so on, to coordinate and ensure the implementation of strategic approach to development of technical capacity in the sector. The next one, which is goal four, is to ensure sustainable improvement in municipal infrastructure delivery and through infrastructure procurement, financing, etc. This is a fairly new focus area, which means it's focusing on to ensure long-term and sustainable interventions, provide infrastructure planning, procurement, and contract management capacity and services to identified municipalities. The second strategic objective, facilitate private sector financing for municipal infrastructure projects. The program plan, which is MISA indicated has got three programs. So the first one, we have taken the strategic objectives that I've taken you through, and we have the indicators, the strategic plan, annual performance plan, complied with, and in 2017, what are they going to do? They are going to make sure that they comply with the APP and so on. So the second one, number of performance reports produced in terms of national treasury, these are operational matters that I would not want to spend much time on. And improve the usefulness of and reliability of performance information. The indicator, the number of approved program or project monitoring and evaluation reports per year as per approved monitoring and evaluation plan. How many per year? It will be two per year that they'll be dealing with. And then we have the ICT implementation plan approved and implemented. And by 2017-18, they'll be having that plan approved and they'll be rolling it out. And the second one, which is still administration, I'll skip administration because it's more inward looking. Yes. And then program two is technical support, which is outward looking. To provide effective support and interventions with greater impact on citizens' lives. And the performance indicator, number of approved municipal infrastructure assessments. and 2017-18 MISA is going to start with 12 with 12 assessments, and then 2018-19 it will be 10, and then they would have covered those reforms. And then the next one, which is still technical support, and number of municipalities with which signed annual technical support plans are signed and reported against. And they'll have 60 in 2017-18. And then number of municipal sector plans developed or reviewed, it will be 60. Maybe it will be important to state at this point that MISA, the municipalities they are working on, they are also targeting the vulnerable municipalities that have been identified in better basis to ensure that they, you know, they make sure that they become more effective there. And still on the technical support services, number of municipalities for which special development frameworks, land use management systems are developed or reviewed. 2017-18, 50 of those municipalities, and the plans will be done. And the number of municipalities for which land use management systems are developed, 40 municipalities. And still on the technical support services, number of municipalities for which infrastructure operations and maintenance plans are developed, 2017-18, 35 of those will be targeted. Number of municipalities supported with institutional turnaround for water services functions, 3 will be targeted for 2017-18. The next one, number of apprentices provided with theoretical training for workplace experience towards meeting the requirement, 2017-18, the target will be 300 of those. And a number of learners provided with workplace experiential training, 90 will be the target for 2017-18. And this is the core function of MISA. That's why, you know, they've got a number of slides on this one. And then the increase of number of skilled technical professionals and artisans in identified municipalities. Then we say number of graduates recruited and placed with municipalities for workplace training and or mentorship towards professional registration. We say 70 in 2017-18. And number of municipal officials provided with technical skills training, 400 in the coming financial year. And then number of students provided with bursaries for studies in technical professions, 2017 we'll have 200. And number of municipal general workers, 20 in the coming financial year. And then the next one is to coordinate strategic objectives, to coordinate and ensure the implementation of a strategic approach to the development of technical capacity in the sector. So we say number of approved capacity development framework will have one framework in 2017-18, and number of municipal capacity development plans developed and implemented, 7 in the coming financial year. Number of qualified artisans placed in municipalities or private sector companies, 100 in the coming financial year. And the last strategic objective, more efficient, effective municipal infrastructure procurement. The number of national framework contracts for municipal infrastructure goods and services concluded. And in 2017-18, we'll have 2 that will be concluded. And the last slide is the financial slide on MISA. And here we're basically just indicating that in terms of 2017-18, on administration, we have 71.5 million that is budgeted. And on the technical support services, which is the core function, we have 309.9 million that is budgeted. And we have the totals there that are showing. Now the last one, infrastructure delivery management support, I indicated that this is a fairly new area, focus area. And there is just, for the moment, there's about 6 million that has been budgeted for compensation of employees and so on. We're still working on it, just building it up and so on. And the concluding slide on MISA is saying that the 2017-18 annual performance plan for MISA is aligned to the new organizational structure. They've got their approved organizational structure now, and the implementation of the new structure will be done progressively with priority given to areas with acute shortage of human resources capacity. Its implementation will enable the employment of technical professionals as public service employees in accordance with the applicable occupational specific dispensation provided in the Public Service Act. Functions to be performed under Program 3, Infrastructure Delivery Management Support. And the APP has been forwarded to the Executive Authority for approval and et cetera, et cetera. And this is the MISA part. And section, the last one is Department of Traditional Affairs. Strategic overview as well, which has a vision. I'll also speak to the vision, and I'll spend a little bit of time on the goals and strategic objectives and those areas. And the vision is inclusive, cohesive, developed, and sustainable traditional interfaith communities. And strategic overview, I will not spend much time on that. The priorities that have been identified in the Department of Traditional Affairs, which were maintaining the restoration or stabilization and strengthening of traditional leadership institutions. We still have many districts out there. So there is that work of stabilization and development of policy, legislation, and regulations towards transformation of the sector, and establishment of partnerships for revival and activation of economic activities. Okay, then coming to the strategic outcome-oriented goals, as we have done with with DCOC and MISA, we're saying functional and accountable institutional traditional leadership, and the goal, outcome-oriented goal and strategic objective under that goal to increase the number of functional structures of traditional leadership by 31st March, and community development-oriented and sustainable institutional traditional leadership. Then we're saying to promote transformation agenda and socio-economic development within traditional leadership structures, and to enhance information management of faith structures, traditional leadership institutions, communities as well. And the next strategic outcome-oriented goal, inclusive, transformed, stable, and cohesive traditional and interfaith communities, the strategic objectives are as follows: to promote transformation agenda of socio-economic development within traditional leadership structures, to reduce the number of traditional disputes, to reduce the number of deaths and injuries resulting from cultural initiation practice in support of zero tolerance, to death of those initiatives. Develop, the last one there is not the last one. The next one is development-oriented, effective and efficient department, which is inward-looking to improve departmental corporate governance systems as well, so that if we have positioned ourselves, we will be able to support our stakeholders. This slide here shows how, this is aligned to NDP chapters, the MTSF, government outcomes, as we have also shown with the previous ones. I will not spend much time on that. And I will also not, let me just highlight a bit of this. Now, the development-oriented, effective and efficient department goal, Then we are saying by 2030 indicator, percentage of the sample traditional communities, participants and stakeholders in the survey responding positively and so on. We have done this thorough kind of examination in this regard because of the state of traditional leadership in terms of where it is at the moment. And the next goal and outputs by 2030, 75% of the sample traditional community participants and stakeholders in the survey responding positively about services and so on of government, whether there is something effective there. These are strategic the indicators and so on. I'll not spend much time on the indicators. Yes, then let me come to the strategic plan. And DTA has got three programs. The first program is administration, and the first column there is to improve departmental corporate governance systems, which is the inward looking to ensure that we support the external stakeholders effectively. And what are we focusing on during 2017-18? 100% of actions in the integrated management plan improved, and the purpose, the descriptor, to improve overall corporate governance and internal controls. And the next one, which is the second program, research, policy and legislation, we're saying to enhance information management of faith structures, traditional leadership, institutions and communities. By 2017, we're saying two African countries researched on the regulation of the faith sector. At the moment, it is not regulated. We have seen CRL Rise doing a lot of work in that regard. So we need to explore as the department that is responsible for this area of work. And then we say number of provinces with protocol guidelines for senior traditional leaders developed. And in 2017-18, one province with protocol guidelines for senior traditional leaders developed. The next one, this strategic objective speaks to reduction of the number of traditional leadership districts. And we are saying that by 2017-18, 8 provinces would have been capacitated on the framework for devolution of traditional leadership disputes and claims. And the purpose, the reason for that is that the Commission on Disputes and Claims its term comes to an end by December 2017. And the next one is number of the next APP target will be customary law of succession and genealogy for one kingship, queenship, etc. And one publication on customary law of succession and genealogy of kingship and queenship, respectively. And the next one is to increase the number of functional structures of traditional leadership, specifically the King's Council and traditional councils. So we're saying two collaboration documents developed, traditional affairs, in regard to traditional affairs. And implementation of 7 provincial support plans monitored. And the next one, guidelines on the participation of traditional leadership in municipal IDP processes developed, and which links up with DCOC in terms of the IDP processes. And then the National Traditional Affairs Capacity Building Plan, National Traditional Affairs Capacity Building Plan approved in that regard. And then the next one, which is still talking about the increase the number of functional structures, by 2017-18 we're saying 3 capacity building interventions for traditional leadership and communities implemented and monitored. And DTA World Vision South Africa Community Social Empowerment Program and Framework for Minimum Tools of Trade for the Institutional Traditional Leadership and traditional course capacity building programs, and so on. These are the 3 programs that we'll be focusing on. And the next one is to promote transformation agenda and socio-economic development within traditional leadership structures. And we're saying two traditional communities capacitated on HIV and AIDS prevention and management, two traditional communities capacitated on food security, and these projects are aimed at empowering traditional communities on HIV and AIDS prevention and management, as well as how they can improve food security in that regard and so on. And then traditional leadership transformation and socioeconomic development program developed. And in 2017-18, this program focuses on facilitating transformation and socioeconomic development of the sector. And it includes empowering traditional leadership structures, vulnerable groups and citizens within traditional communities on the Bill of Rights, etc., etc. And the next one, saying to reduce the number of deaths and injuries from cultural initiation practice. So talking about four awareness campaigns on customer initiation practice conducted, provincial initiation teams monitored, and four monitoring reports developed. These targets will contribute towards the achievement of the outcome target of reducing initiation debt, and so on and so on. And then the budget allocation of the Department of Transitional Affairs. We have three programs, as I said earlier, it's administration. In 2017-18, 37.7 million allocated, and research policy, 19 million, and institutional support and coordination, 88.2 million. All in all, in 2017, it's 145 million that is allocated, and the following year, it will be increased to 154.2 million to 164.3 million. That also includes the transfers to CRL Rights Commission. Then we also have economic classification, compensation of employees, there 2017-18, 69 billion, goods and services, 32.8 million, transfers, 40.4 million, and payments for capital assets, 2.7 million. And that is the pie chart that is explaining the same thing. And the recommendation there for the portfolio committee to take note and also make input. Thank you, Mr. President. And then maybe the slides on the feedback, would you want me, because we have submitted them, on the things that were raised. You know, there are about four or five slides which I said.
You want to comment on that?
Maybe if I go back just to indicate what we've done. The hard copy. We go to hard copy. It is on 29, slide 29. Recommendations on annual performance plan and budget both four. And the first issue was the committee noted with concern the underspending on the equitable share grant in 2015-16 due to the withholding of the grant from 60 municipalities that failed to pay water board and ESCOP. And the response from the second column was merely saying the National Treasury withheld the equitable share of 60 municipalities during that time and against the 2014-15 allocation, owing to their failure to comply with Section 65 of the Municipal Finance Management Act that requires municipalities to pay their creditors' invoices within 30 days, and so on. I'll not go through the whole. And the second one was the department reports to the committee on a quarterly basis on progress made with the restructuring of municipalities which have been affected by the boundary redetermination. A detailed progress report will be submitted to the committee by 31st March 2017. And then the department ensures that the recommendations of all forensic reports commissioned by municipalities are implemented and a report is presented to the committee on a quarterly basis. Progress on the implementation of recommendations emanating from forensic reports were presented to the PC on the 23rd of August 2016. And the next one on slide 30, COGTA and National Treasury should monitor adherence to the agreements between municipalities, water boards, and ESCOM to ensure that proactive interventions can be made. And the response, the total municipal overdue debt has decreased by 699 million in January 2017 from the reported total debt of 10.2 billion in November 2016. A total of 24 municipalities had payment agreements in place as of August 2016. And I remember we came before the portfolio committee 3 weeks ago, and we also reported with ESCOM and the other stakeholders, we also reported more on this area. A concern was raised that the department had not finalized the local government laws amendment bill, which was approved by cabinet on 16 March, and then a decision was taken not to proceed to process the local government laws amendment bill, but rather to split the LGLAB into separate bills. That is the municipal demarcation bill and the municipal structures bill and the municipal systems bill, which I presented, honorable members, the last time I was here, I presented those as well. So in terms of progress, I think, oh yes, there is quite a very long slide. Should I go through all of them?
No.
But I think those things are there.
But it is a point that members to welcome, Jefferson. Okay. Thank you very much. I guess what we should then do now is to move on to the questions, comments, and whatever recommendations members want to make. Let's do the comments in parts. Start with DECOG, then move to MISA, and then the Department of Traditional Affairs. Will that be fine? No? Okay, now that we let's start with DECOG then. Any comments by members? MISA. Let's do it this way. There's Kudisa, there's Mariam. Who else wants to speak? Let's do the two individuals for now. Nyambos. We'll start with Honorable Kudisa, Honorable Mariam, and Honorable Mchato. In that order.
Thanks, Kiana. Thanks, Nyambos. My question, Nyambosa, is with regard to rural and urban renewal strategy development. I noticed that there is a decrease, yet this program is very, very vital. Now, I wanted to ask from the DG whether they are going to be able to do all the functions with the decrees. And I noticed that the decrees is caused mainly by the fact that there is an assignment that is not there that has to do with the legislative support and the demarcation, etc. And I mean, there is a lot that is involved with regard to, for instance, government buildings, our towns, etc. I know that when I touch on that one, the department has got to link with economic development and other developments. That's what I wanted to know, ask Nyamboswe. It's whether DG, you'll be able to function optimally with the decrease of the budget in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Madam?
Chairperson, a couple of comments. First of all, also with regard to the allocations per program, and in particular, I note the decrease on the regional and urban development and legislative support program of 28%, and that is primarily tied to the demarcation transitional grant. What worries me is that, and we warned this 2 years ago when these transitions, when these demarcations and amalgamations were first mooted, that this was insufficient funding for the transition. What worries me is that many of these amalgamations are proving unsuccessful, they're proving to worsen the financial situation of municipalities, they are making it difficult for those municipalities to operate, and if we now start withdrawing this funding at this stage, it worries me that those municipalities will collapse. My second concern, Chairperson, is that once again we see nothing in the entire performance plan relating to the performance of provinces. Now, this has been something that I have been asking about for a number of years. The department's former name was the Department of Provincial and Local Government, and part of its mandate was and is to oversee the performance of provinces. And yet we don't review provincial audit outcomes. We don't see any information whatsoever on plans to improve provincial performance. Nothing. So my question then is, what are the plans of the department with regard to the provinces? My third comment, Chair, relates to the recommendations on the annual performance plan. And while I'm glad to see that there have been there's certainly been movement on the recommendations that we made in April last year, I'm still concerned about, for example, the comment that the arrear debt of government departments has been addressed. If we have a look at the Section 71 report that was released yesterday by National Treasury, you'll see that in the last quarter, debt by national and provincial departments has increased by 300 million rand, debt to municipalities, and now stands at 6.3 billion rand owed by national and provincial departments to municipalities. So while there has been payments made, the actual amount that is owed to municipalities is increasing. Chair, my last comment relates to the community work program, and if I have a look at the annual expenditure review, the estimates of national expenditure, table 4.1 of that document. I note that we are proposing to spend more on community work program in the medium term, and yet the number of participants in that program is actually planned to decrease from 268,000 in the current financial year to 226,000 in 2019-20. Now, that to me seems to be a bit backward, given that this is something of a safety net, a social safety net, and based on the discussion that we had last week. So I'd welcome some input on that, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. Mine, Chair, is just want to say I was looking at the program that I hear. What the department had, what plan that do they have to ensure that this issue of understanding of equitable shares. I know that currently all the department, all that mandate was withheld has been resolved. But what plan do we have that we don't go back to the situation that had happened last time?
Responsible from the department.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to allow the DG and his team to respond and then we'll come at the end. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. The team that I've come up with here, you know, there are people that are working in these areas, and I'm going to ask the issue of the rural and urban strategy and September. September will Mr. Forty will be able to deal with that. The issues of CWP, well, Mr. P. Tisho is here, this is the acting head of CWP, and the issues of debt, that we are, you know, the debt seems to be increasing while we are also, while we are servicing it. We have Ms. Twane, the last one. She will deal with that. We want to start with Mr. Fawcett.
Okay. Let's do that.
Okay. Thanks, DG. And good morning to the honourable members. The question on the decrease in the allocation, I think that the first two questions basically speak to the same point, but with the emphasis more on the impact on the second one from the honourable Melham. I think that the point that is made there is that the allocation or the budget for the grant, transitional grant, was located in this branch, and that grant was really meant for funding and supporting municipalities in terms of the establishment activities, in terms of dealing with issues of HR, financial management systems, in preparing for those new entities that would have been created. So that allocation was meant for that only. So it actually created then the impression that we had more budget. But it has no impact in terms of the other programs in relation to the first question that was asked in terms of the impact on the programs on the urban development. So we continue to have a program implementing the integrated urban development framework, and it's not just a COCTA program, it is an all of government program. So we work with other sector departments, particularly your built environment departments. We have partners, donors, and even Treasury working with us on the implementation of that program. So the issue of the decrease in that allocation, it won't really impact on the program. But the issue on the adequacy of the grant to support these new municipalities, and I think the initial activities, we have covered those. But the question that the honourable member is raising, I think it's a different question in terms of the sustainability and viability of municipalities overall. And this grant was not really meant to fund those issues. It was really aimed at focusing more on addressing some of the immediate issues to assist the municipalities to match in terms of creation of new entities. The last question on the issue of provinces. The issue of provinces, I think we need to look at it broader in terms of the role of COCTA. I think our role, it's limited to provincial quota departments, not the sphere as a whole, because your concurrent functions at a provincial level are managed by other sector departments that shares both those concurrent functions. So education, health, human settlement, those national departments would set national norms and standards in relation to what provinces would do, and also monitor, play an oversight role in terms of monitoring how those departments would perform. From our side, provincial quota departments, starting at the level of ensuring that we look at the alignment of their APPs that we do, but also through the MINMEC processes, these provincial quota departments report back on the work that they're doing in terms of their oversight responsibilities. And the legislations that we manage in terms of the Systems Act and so on, where there's responsibilities given to MECs, whether it's appointment of officials and so on, they report on all of those matters to the Minister of Quota National. So in relation to our function, local government function, we do work with the provincial quota department and play that oversight role. But I think in terms of the sphere as a whole, there will be other partners or other departments that take responsibility of their functional areas. So we can be managing issues of health and education and so on, because those departments deal with their specific line concurrent functions. Thanks, sir.
Perhaps in addition to your comments, it may just be useful that at some point, as the chairperson of the committee had indicated in the earlier discussions, that we may have to just revisit the matter and find out what are the areas where this committee can make contributions in relation to improvement of governance, etc., etc. What I'm saying is that let's take what you have said. I think it's fairly useful, but we do need to go back to the discussion and find out what scope exists to meaningfully engage with the provinces.
Chairperson, thank you. Chair, first of all, there were two questions that were answered there, and the one was about the demarcation transition grant.
Yes.
And I absolutely accept that it is to address the systemic challenges arising from the transition from or the amalgamation. However, I don't believe that those challenges have been overcome, and I don't believe they're going to be overcome in the short time frame that has been created here. And that by withdrawing that grant, those challenges are not going to go away. They're actually going to worsen, and the municipalities are going to fail. But more importantly, and this is why I'm actually getting a little bit angry about this now. I am getting angry because I've raised it year after year after year. This department is willfully ignoring its own vision and its own mission statement. I want to read the vision of the Department of Cooperative Governance. An integrated, responsive, and highly effective governance system, including communities, to achieve sustainable development and improved service delivery. So it talks about governance system. Then we go on to the mission. Our mission is to facilitate cooperative governance and support all spheres of government, promote traditional affairs and support associated institutions through developing appropriate policies and legislation to promote integration in government development programs and service delivery. That's the first bullet point. The second, providing strategic intervention, support, and partnerships to facilitate policy implementation, and here's the key part, in the provinces and local government. And thirdly, create enabling mechanisms for communities to participate in government. Now, if you are creating legislation and policy for provinces, to oversee cooperative governance with provinces. And I'm not talking about the line function. I'm not talking about how do we oversee education at a departmental level. I'm not talking about how do we implement healthcare at a provincial level. I'm certainly not talking about how do we get in there and do the job. I'm talking about the big picture. Is the province as a whole meeting its stated objectives? Are they spending their money appropriately? Is their treasury following the guidelines? The same way that we oversee municipalities as a whole. We don't get down into the trenches and do the job of the municipalities. We don't go and fix the potholes in the municipalities. We oversee, are they doing their job? And that's what cooperative governance should be doing. And it's not. And it's not doing it because this department is ignoring it.
Now, I'm going to try and avoid the situation where you have dialogue. I guess that the answers are meant to, as responses to issues that have been raised. It doesn't mean that there's no scope. Opportunities to examine some of these matters in a bit more detail now in the near future. Are there other comments? Yes. Comments on the questions, please.
PWP. And we also have the CFO of GCOC that will also come in.
Okay.
There are spending issues that...
Can we have the responses? George.
I've never had a mic. Can I stand up, Chair?
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think our Chair is quite hopefully easy to respond to. The decline in the revenue in terms of what we are receiving towards the end of the MTF is the reason why there is a decline in the job opportunities. But we are hoping that in the second or mid-term, in the middle of of our MTF, we are going to be able to receive more funding. There's been some serious belt tightening, and we'll come back to this committee in the middle of the MTF to report to you in terms of progress. We are meeting with Public Works coincidentally today. On EPWP, on the work program, so that we can look into this very matter. Our target is 1 million, and the decline is making us very worried in terms of the target that has been set out. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Yes, Madam.
Thank you, Chairperson. My response is with regards to that follow-up question on the area debt owed by government departments. Just to say that there are two portions of that debt. There is the current debt that we are seeing to it that the government departments are paying. And that debt is not consistent or stagnant, because as municipalities bill, whereas the departments are paying some of the debt, it also goes up. So the sharp increase that you may see in the December Section 721 report is also aligned to the fact that that is the time when the most municipalities would raise their annual rates. However, the main problem is with regards to this debt is regarding the older debt, which the governments did not pay, so the arrear debt that is not current. And the biggest problem with that is the allocation of those funds to the departments, because whereas work has been done jointly with Public Works to resolve in terms of who's responsible for what portion of that debt, the departments are not sitting with those funds to be able to service the older debt, because of the fact that in terms of their accounting system, all monies that were obviously not used, they are sent back to the National Revenue Fund, and those monies have not been reallocated to them. So this has been put to Treasury to try and find funding to be able to service those. However, the current debt is what we are maintaining and making sure that they are paying as the debt is being raised. Thank you.
Chair, I've heard two funny statements here now, one after the other. The first was that revenue for CWP is declining. Now, if I look at the budget allocation for CWP in the MTEF, it increases over the 3-year period. So I don't know where the idea is that, that revenue for CWP is declining, because there it is in black and white in the estimate of national expenditure increasing for the program. And yet the number of people that are being employed is dropping by about 50,000 people. That's the first issue. The second is just a comment, is that to what the CFO said about municipalities, most municipalities raising their rates in December. No, they don't. Most municipalities raise their rates in July, on the first day of the new financial year. So that's already factored in. But what we're seeing is that the amount of debt that is owed to municipalities by government departments is increasing quarter on quarter. And that's got very little to do with the backlog. It's saying that the backlog is increasing because government departments are not paying their bills now. They're not paying what they owe in the current period. So my question is, what are we doing to enforce the payment of government debt? Because the more we allow this to get away from us, the more these municipalities are struggling and the more they are becoming dysfunctional and failing. And then we end up with situations where we have crises with crises with ESCOM.
Okay. We have a comment from you. After that, we'll move on to the questions of Equity Bushley.
Chairperson, the Section 7 Fund report are quarterly reports that are developed by National Treasury in arrears. So when they produce a report in December, it's a report of the previous quarter that ended in September. And September reconstitute quarter one of municipalities because July to September is their first quarter. That is why that big chunk of the annually raised revenue falls into that quarter. So when Treasury reports in December, it's for the three...
Now you're forcing me to do something that I don't enjoy doing.
If we're going to say facts, then we must
well,
say facts.
No.
You can't come here and tell me that
No. I'm requesting you to conduct yourself in a way that fits into how meetings are run. If you want to raise the question, you raise your hand, you indicate a point that you speak, not the other way around. That's not the dialogue. Are you through? Thank you very much. Yes, Minister.
Question of expenditure. And I think we should respond to those questions. I think the issue of the CWP, I will request the Deputy Minister now just to deal with it. And I will then deal with the issue and our plans to deal with underspending, as well as the status of amalgamated municipalities. Chair, I must indicate very quickly that it's true, the observation made by Honourable Member, that there are municipalities who are newly amalgamated, who are having some challenges in terms of... remember, we had all the areas that we said amalgamated municipalities should pay attention to. It's not only on finances. We also had an area dealing with, among other things, we also have an area that dealt with HR-related issues and broadly issues of institutional capacity. So we still, of course, have municipalities that are struggling around those areas. But now what we are doing here collaboratively, working with the provinces or the relevant provincial department, we are focusing on those areas in as far as, because they vary from one municipality to the other. So we are focusing on those areas to assist those municipalities. I think because we are almost eight months now into this new administration tenure, I would suggest that maybe to be appropriate that we be accorded an opportunity to present the status of all the newly amalgamated municipalities, but also give details as to how we deal with those specific areas, working collaboratively with provinces as well as National Treasury where it's necessary. I think it will be important if the committee accord us that opportunity to come and present the status report, just to show that it's not an even process, and it's not like we are failing, or maybe Amaragete municipalities are faced with the same challenges, all of them. No, there are challenges, I mean, differ from one municipality to the other. So I think it will be important for us to factually, I mean, be allowed to factually present our findings and our own assessment on this particular situation. And the second issue is on what are our plans to deal with, or maybe let me deal with this one of municipality. What is it that we are doing? Chair, I think the improvement that has been there, albeit very, very minimal, on the issue of the debt owed to municipalities by both the national and provincial department, is mainly because of the establishment of interministerial team that is led by the Minister Mercy, who is the Minister of Public Works, that is working with various national departments as well as provincial departments to deal with this issue of debt. Now, what I must indicate here, this issue is not a straightforward issue, because there are various challenges that have been picked up as we deal with this issue. The first common challenge is verification of this, because in some cases there are disputed figures by the department, or maybe by the affected departments, either national or provincial. So we need that team should, one of its tasks is to verify those figures. So there is that team that is currently led by Department of Public Works that is working on this matter, working together with ourselves, but also engaging directly affected provinces or affected departments. So that team is currently seized with this particular task. And the third issue that needed to be responded to, our plans to deal with underspending. I think we are all aware that most of the municipalities that are affected by this underspending problem, in the main, they are faced with the challenge of technical skills. Now, MISA has been established, and MISA has been in existence for quite some time. Now, MISA is working with this municipality. Remember, in the last financial year, we had to avert reallocation of resources from a municipality like Sekukuni, if you still remember one, Chair. It's mainly because of the technical expertise that we have in MISA. So that particular approach is still being employed. Even currently, I can tell, quite unfortunately, Chair, that Sekukuni seems to be having the same problem also this financial year, the financial year that is coming to an end now. So as we speak now, our back-to-basic team is working with National Treasury and our affected municipalities, including Sekukuni Municipality, to check as to how we can avoid this, because the issue of reallocation of funds is not doing any good to our cause. Because if we reallocate these funds, then that simply says the identified need is not going to be addressed. So we are trying our level best to avoid this situation. We picked up the problem in the, I think it's some few municipalities in Limpopo, where we wanted to do what we term a conversions, where we wanted to take over the allocation as MISA and implement MIG allocation for that matter, and implement on behalf of those municipalities. But the reason of the matter is that when we checked from the accountability point of view, as a COCTA, of course, working together with MISA, we are not ready, I mean, to deal with those conversions, because conversions, as you know, Chair, it implies now the MIG allocated fund must be taken now from COCTA and be allocated to MISA. So management of those funds, that simply suggests that we are taking full accountability or responsibility to account on the usage of that of those funds. So as a result of identification of that gap in terms of technical skills or required skills to deal with issues of financial accountability within MISA, the conversion issue was reversed, and currently we are working very, very closely with the CFO office in COCTA and MISA to make sure that we develop that capacity to deal with these conversions. So definitely we think in the next financial year, as MISA, we will be able to undertake these conversions without any concern of capacity. I think those are the 3 points that I wanted to raise. And the issue of the CWP, I'm going to allow the Deputy Minister to entertain that question.
Minister.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Maybe if I could just ask Mr. Milam to just restate his question. I just want to make sure that whether we're reading the same facts and the same figures in the same way.
Okay, so if I look at the expenditure of the estimate of national expenditure, and I look at the program for community work, I look at the amount expended 2017-18, 2018-19, 2019-20.
Yes.
The budget increases over the MTEF.
Correct.
And yet, if I look at table 4.1 of the same document, the number of work opportunities provided through the CWP in the current financial year is 268,000, and it decreases to 226,000 over the same time frame.
You're now reading from the national expenditure.
Estimate of national expenditure.
Okay. Yeah. I think we might need to do some cross-checking on those documents, because if you look at our document that we've presented here today, page 21 of what the DG presented, it states that the 2017-18 APP target is 258,400 work opportunities provided. Yeah, so that would represent an increase of 23,135 is what we're planning. So obviously, DG, I think we might just need to compare the two documents. What I can tell you is that there's definitely, we've never... If you recall last week's presentation, we've never reported that there are 268,000 work opportunities at present. I think, we've always reported between 226,000, 234, I think. Tisha can correct me. So there's definitely a problem and inconsistency with the figures, and we thank the Honourable Member for pointing that out. We'll look into it. But definitely, we are definitely on an upward trajectory in terms of increasing the number of participants and the sites. But as we indicated last week and on previous engagements with this committee, as well as in other fora, we are concerned that whilst the MTF allocation is increasing, we do not believe that it is sufficient to attain the 1 million target. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, that does it for now in relation to TICO. Let's move on to MISA.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Nyambose, you see, MISA is like the engine room for the operation of the department, because it assists municipalities with regard to technical skills and also ensure that they are sustainable in a whole lot of issues like governance, etc. But what we notice, Chairperson, is that, municipalities usually fail to spend their MIC funding. In most instances, I don't say all of them. And I just want to ask what the challenge is with regard to that. And, of course, sometimes we find that they don't have the necessary skills, but it seems there are challenges. Are the challenges with MISA as an organization, or are there inhibitions or challenges that MISA will face when it deals with municipalities? Because you find that projects are not completed, yet money is returned to treasury. What is the problem? Are there any challenges that perhaps are being faced in that regard? So we'd expect that we're able to better our communities, and MISA should assist us in that regard. So it's just that question, Chairperson. Okay. It's like a general question.
All right. I'm sure it's noted. Any other person wants to comment on this one?
Yes, Chair. Another question actually was Professor Chad mentioned here. He says that money's been retained, projects are incomplete. The other side is that projects are incomplete, yet the money is not there. And in some instances, the projects are totally not there, but money has been utilized.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, without taking you back to the report that we just completed, I wanted to throw a thought that probably for the department to consider. Seeing that municipalities are struggling in terms of finances, in terms of settling their own debts, and that they are owed by different departments. And I think as this committee, I can safely say that we are not confident enough that a lot is done in trying to recover those monies owed to municipalities. Wouldn't it be a possibility that we get a similar report as we got from ESCOM in our previous meetings, where they were able to say, Municipality A owes us this much, an arrangement has been made, and they have stuck to the arrangement or others have deviated. Can't we get a similar breakdown as to which department owes what municipality, how much, what is the current status in terms of engagement towards settling those debts? I think that probably that might assist us in understanding that a lot is being done to recover what is owed to those municipalities. That's just on the previous report that we're engaging in. But in terms of MISA, I kind of, you know, like to get an understanding on this one. I think I raised it in the previous presentation where MISA was giving us their annual report, that it remains a responsibility of MISA to ensure that municipalities are capacitated to the full and that they are able to deliver basic services, they are able to do whatever is expected of them by the different communities that they serve. Then MISA then therefore has a responsibility of ensuring that the skills base in the municipalities is enhanced and that all the necessary and even scarce skills are addressed in the different municipalities. Now, in the annual report that was presented, it was indicated that such a responsibility has now been handed over to the same municipalities to deal with. So MESA is now outsourcing that responsibility to the municipalities, the same municipalities that do not have the necessary capacity. So for me, I think it defeats the purpose in terms of the objectives and the role that MISA is supposed to be playing. But when I read in what is presented here in terms of objectives, that capacity responsibility is still here. So for me, it doesn't gel, it doesn't make sense. Can I just get an explanation as to how this works? Thank you, Chair.
Sure, maybe without dictating how we should approach the question session, maybe let's be allowed to answer everything, and then if there's follow-up questions, let's then entertain follow-up questions, because it gets a bit disruptive when there are interjections while we're still trying to respond to all the questions. Thank you. I'm going to allow DG just to guide the team.
Thanks, Minister. Thanks, Chair.
I'm going to ask Mr. Vimba to deal with those questions that have been raised.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Chair, the answers, DG, I will ask Roger to also come in with regard to the underspending on MIG. Coming to the first question by Honorable Kubisa, exactly what is the challenge? Is it with MISA or are there inhibitions in the municipalities themselves with regard to spending on MIG? It's a combination, Honorable Kubisa, of a number of things. Most of these municipalities that are struggling to spend, the challenge in the mean will be not necessarily some of them technical challenges. For instance, I'll make an example of a big municipality like Mopani. But the challenge in the main will be around issues of procurement. They take long to agree on which projects must be implemented. This becomes a problem. It's not a problem of technical, it's a problem of prioritization within the institution. And then at the point where they're supposed to implement projects, they're not ready because they have not planned properly ahead at an institutional level. And hence, if you look into the annual plans that were presented now, we've got goal number 4, which talk about MISA assisting municipalities to improve infrastructure procurement, contract management, and so forth. Before that goal, we were not doing that because we're just focusing on the technical support side of things. But now we said, no, man, the problem is not just technical. How do we deal with the issues of ensuring that the issues of procurement within the municipal environment is improved? Then we are putting in place that program, and we are putting in place a number of framework contracts that must assist some municipalities who are struggling in terms of performance to make sure that our framework contracts that are ready as and when is a need for implementation of programs. They can simply place orders against such contracts. And the other challenges, of course, will be the issue around the stability of the institution itself. Because you may have all these technical professionals, but if the municipality at the institutional level is not strong, then you find all these manner of challenges. Hence, we're working very closely with the P2P team to ensure that all the municipalities that have been prioritized through P2P, MISA is there to make sure that then we respond in terms of the technical work that must be done. Money is returned, the projects are incomplete, sometimes there are just no projects at all, but money has been spent. Again, I'm sure Mr. Sroga will come in on this and add in terms of the experiences of MIG around this particular area. But I'll make an example of Ngakamuduri Mulema, for instance. Situation where you find out the municipality, because of poor financial management, and you'll have a situation where they have planned projects that they've appointed, but because of sound poor management, financial management, you'll have the MIG, the money that was supposed to be utilized for MIG, being utilized for payment of staff and other things, and it does have an impact in terms of the completion of projects. But I'll ask Mr. Saroga to just come in and add on this particular area. But I'm just making an example of one of those situations. The last question, it remains the responsibility of MISA to capacitate municipalities and ensure that they are fully capacitated. Yes, I agree. And the decisions that we had taken earlier through it was when we were doing the refocusing of MISA, to say this thing of MISA recruiting apprentices and young graduates from municipalities. Municipalities are struggling. They don't absorb these people when they are qualified and so forth. Can't we instead support municipalities to recruit these people? In other words, they might be in the municipal books, but we can then support them in terms of paying stipends for a particular period of time, but they are not recruited necessarily by us. We recruit together with municipalities. So it's not like we're not going to proceed with the support that we're providing. But instead of MESA being the employer, we'll say let the municipality be the employer, but MESA support the municipality if we have to find the stipend. We agree, let's find the stipend for a particular period of time with the provision that the municipality will progressively absorb. That is the strategy. It's not like we're moving away. But what we said we'll do, Honorable Member, is over and above that we'll be recruiting ourselves, if you've seen this APP, young graduates, which will be paid by MESA, but deployed to struggling municipalities, as Honorable Dimelem recommended when we're here. We have taken that recommendation. We said we have identified a number of municipalities who are struggling, and then we will recruit young graduates. We're going to reduce preventing young graduates now and make sure that we deploy them in those struggling municipalities and appoint mentors ourselves to mentor those young graduates towards professional registration. So we're going to do that ourselves. And also, together with Transnet, we have entered into a relationship. Transnet has trained 3,000 artisans. They are there. They need to be deployed in different employment places. They are struggling. We agree that we also have over 150 artisans that are qualified that we have trained. Let's come up with a joint program where MESA and Transnet will co-fund the stipends and place some of these qualified artisans in different municipalities and some where possible even to private sector to make sure that we support the employment of young people. So we have put that program as well as part of implementation of the recommendations of this committee in the previous sessions when we were here. Thank you very much. Mr. Saroga, perhaps you could just come in.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I think Mr. Vimba has covered quite a substantial amount of what I wanted to add on. However, I think maybe one could just indicate that we might perhaps need a support from the Portfolio Committee in a sense that sector departments that are supposed to play their part are not necessarily coming on board. And that in itself stretches the capacity of MESA in trying to cover areas that are left out by sector departments, particularly in support to municipalities regarding support, planning, and the like. As in most cases, as it has been realized, it's not much of the lack of capacity of the technical units, but more of issues around institutional arrangements and governance, as it has been alluded to. In terms of the projects that are not completed but money been completed, I think perhaps if there is a particular case, we might need to get to know that, because what we're having together with the municipalities and the provinces, we are doing the spot checks, wherein we do site visits to verify these projects to ensure that they are indeed on, and we also working very closely with Treasury on that aspect. It might be maybe an issue that it is an unfortunate oversight, because we could even found out in instances like what Mr. Vimba has alluded on, that a municipality is using MIG for operational pressures, from which we interact with Treasury to make sure that we recover that money from equitable share. So, yeah, I think that is what I can say. Thanks so much.
Maybe for you.
Yes, Chair. You see, Chair, we are not impressed by the responses from the department, really, to be honest, to speak the truth. The department knows very well that corruption is rampant at the municipality. I'm reminded now when the minister talks about the Sekukune. You see, there is a presidential proclamation which is out last year, instructing the investigation units to investigate Sekukune and Elias Mutswane in local municipalities in Limpopo. I can bring you this stack of papers in my office of, you know, the extent to which politicians and officials at local level are conniving in looting. I have them in my office. And I'm going to request the minister. I'm going to hand them over to the minister. I'm going to keep copies. I want to see the minister going down because the said unit that was supposed to investigate these two municipalities was there for less than a week. Less than a week. And officials and politicians are laughing. They are saying nothing is going to happen here. And we know these politicians and officials. They are owning houses in Khorolezdan and elsewhere in the country. There is just no, you know, commitment on the part of the department to root out corruption, to be honest. I'm going to give you a stack of papers, evidence, and the minister must act on that. And it's not only these two municipalities, it's all over. So, you know, to sit here to say, no, this and that, when you know exactly where the thing is where the shoe is pinching, we are just wasting time. One day, I was talking in Parliament then about corruption, then the former minister, Pravin Gordhan, outside Parliament said to me, Masipi must bring me evidence. Now he's gone, I've got evidence for the Honorable Minister here. I've got documents, Minister. I'm going to give you those documents. And I want to see how, whether you are going to act or not on this, what you call, corruption, and especially at Elias Mutswane. I've got documents. They are running business. They are providing services to the municipality.
On the same issue.
Because this one is a serious one. I think what Mr. Honorable Masebe is saying is very serious, because there are municipalities that are up in flames as we speak. In KwaZulu Natal, I can vouch you that people are angry. And when people are angry, they destroy property. And at times, they block even roads and destroy cars for the people who are not related to the problem that is at hand. You know, saying this road was given, I mean, the budget for this road was 10 million. And it escalated, it ran to 20 million. And yet, there is no completion. Where is the money going? So these are serious issues, Chairperson. And it's all in good faith that we speak about them to the department to attend to them, because it hampers service delivery, which are people so dearly need. See, I think maybe because the Honorable Minister is here, and perhaps to crack the whip with regard to that one, because sometimes you find that people's lives are endangered. In one municipality, at Mlala, for instance, you know, roads were blocked and people could not get into the town. You know, I may not know the details, but these issues are very serious.
I know they were speaking to the department. It works in tandem with the province as such, COGTA in the province. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Can you say on this point of corruption, I'm sure the minister will have a comment or two, that one of the things that we may have to do is really to encourage members to make the information available to the minister so that they can then pursue the issues. And where there are gaps, please collect the information with additional data that assist you to clarify or strengthen the allegation so that when the minister pursues the issue, he has some substance, something at hand to use as a basis for pursuing the issues. Minister.
Thank you, Chair. I think you have covered my first response, because I was going to just request that the portfolio committee do its work also in terms of providing information as expected, because I think we are trying to be a bit structured in what has been requested from us to present the portfolio committee, and we are presenting as requested by the portfolio committee. So if there is a need for us to follow up on specific cases, I don't think we should be blamed for not covering those cases that are brought to our attention now. That's very much unfair, Chair. But all in all, the process of ensuring that we have a functional developmental local government system is not a straightforward process, and it will require all of us, to work together. So working together, I will argue that should not be underpinned by a gameplay. Let's get the information, and in a very structured fashion, deal with that information. But I must commend members who have brought some of the issues to our attention, because in most cases, issues that have been brought to our attention, we're able to follow up on those issues and provide the necessary response where required. So I think we should have a bit structured engagement. We should not behave as if, there is no provision for us to engage very, very structured. There is a provision. Today, unfortunately, we are dealing with, as requested by the committee, we are dealing with this particular item at hand. So I think we should be allowed to exhaust the purpose of today's engagement as requested by the portfolio committee. And if there are further submissions that member want us to probe further, as you have correctly summed up, Chair, please let's get those submissions and we'll respond accordingly.
Okay.
Chair, I think there is an important thing that we need to emphasize here. What is the role of MISA? MISA's role is very, very clear. MISA's role is to support. It's not to take over the responsibility or the function as prescribed by the Constitution of municipality. So as part of developing a capacitated state, we want to see municipalities that are properly capacitated. So that doesn't imply that now municipalities should outsource. The other way around, outsource their responsibility to MISA. No, MISA is just there to support. That's why it was established after we realized that there is a need for us to support municipalities. But the municipality of our dream is a capacitated municipality with technical expertise which can undertake its responsibilities as outlined by the Constitution. So it's not a municipality that will rely on intervention and support from MISA or any other structure that we create. So I think we will support them, and the support has been indicated by the acting CEO. But all in all, we want municipalities to be properly capacitated, and that's their responsibility to undertake this important role. I think I wanted just to put an emphasis on that particular area. Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Can we move to then the Department of Traditional Affairs and the last question? Anyone else wants to speak? Another comment?
Yeah. No, thank you very much, Chair. You can
see that I'm always the first. And I'm not about to show my anger as my honorable colleague. I'm not about to be angry. So thank you very much, Chairperson. I see here that the department wants to implement projects in the traditional leadership that have to do with transformation and socio-economic development for 20 communities by 31st of May 2020. Now, I want to understand, what does the department mean by 20 communities? Does it mean the tribes, 20 traditional authorities? What is the meaning of that? For me, Chairperson, this is a very important matter, because traditional communities are faced with a plethora of socio-economic issues. And in most instances, the emphasis has been to do with matters of conflicts. And with legally knowledge or capacitation given to traditional communities insofar as they are able to develop themselves economically. And I know I don't want to tread on the area of agriculture or rural development, but I'm saying this is an important issue that has got to be dealt with. So of course, we'd like to see the department moving even further. That's why there was a paradigm shift to the administrative centers, traditional administrative centers, rather than those houses, traditional courts, because the notion was that these should be the centers for development over and above centers for trying cases, etc. So that's my take, Chair, on this matter. What do you mean, traditional 20 villages, 20 tribes, whatever?
Much. Thanks, Chair. Just a little bit of a concern, and that is the way that the document references throughout the goals as being 2030 goals. Now, that's a good 14 years away. Is it going to take us 14 years to sort out the issues that we have with traditional leadership? It seems to me that we should be looking at something a lot closer as our deadlines, a lot more taking some of these issues on a lot more aggressively and resolving them a lot more aggressively.
Thanks for the question. The first one, what do we mean by community, the tribes or villages? By community here, we're referring to how the framework defines a community. Community, you know, like a village under a headman or headwoman. That is a community. And each community, you know, from the basic unit, you know, constitute a traditional council under a senior traditional leader, at that level, with the headmen and headwomen that fall under that senior traditional leader, you know, constituting that traditional council. So this is what we meant by that. Because we have phrased it this way because we thought, you know, already we have a headman who is leading that community in that environment, instead of an area where there wouldn't be perhaps people that you can come through. And we know that through the headmen, through the traditional councils, through the, you know, those local houses, through those structures like that, we may be able to make those inroads. There might be a weakness, you know, from the observation on the ground, and that will help us to improve as we go forward. But the intention was that many of these communities, especially on socioeconomic development, are being ripped off. We've got mining activities happening in these villages. Now, these issues are also raised at the United Nations in terms of the Declaration on the Rights of the Indigenous Peoples of the World. The, you know, that you have big companies that go to these remote areas, rural areas, communities, you know, where they do activities there, and without those communities benefiting or harming. And we also are mindful that, you know, the issues of socioeconomic, that is why even the way we've phrased it, we know it's not our mandate to, we're not the economic department. However, we have noticed that if we stand far from the space, we get those people ripped off. People don't take them seriously in that area. So we're saying we're going to facilitate and ensure that at least we have the inroads. Now, linked to why do we put goals such as 2030 and so on, this was an attempt to, because of the complexity, the nature of issues that we're stating here, we're linking this to the sustainable, United Nations Sustainable Development, which is 2030. We're linking it to the NDP, which is 2030, that if we're linking it to 2030, for example, if we were to say 2019 or 2020 and so on, we know the reality on the ground. There are a number of things. For example, last year in November, we were supposed to have had a dialogue, the first of its kind, with traditional leaders. We have shifted it to May, where a number of outstanding things have got to be ironed out with the traditional community. At the heart of this is what the Constitution says, that Chapter 7 of the Constitution that says, you know, the whole municipal space is wall to wall. Traditional leaders have got to find themselves in that sort of space. And they've been in existence, and so there's got to be a harmonization process that has got to be able to come in. So there are those complexities that are there, and we also accept that, you know, putting a 14-year, 15-year goal, and so we're trying to say, if we were to plan from there, planning backwards, and ensure that we begin to address some of these issues, that was the motivation. We're linking it to that. And we are also aware of, lastly, of Agenda 2063, African Agenda 2063. And so we thought it was too far away goal, but at least the NDP goal target of 2030 and so on, you know, that, yeah.
It's just a minor follow-up, you know. I do hear what the DG is saying, and I also understand the angle from which Honorable Mehan is coming from to say you will get these things in 2030 is too far. Now the DG is coming from the legal framework perspective to say a community is defined like this. There is a headman. There is a headman or a
traditional council.
Yeah. But DG, I don't want to make this debate, this discourse academic. The moment you say it, you define it in that angle, it becomes a problem. Because you say a community, you have a headman, that is a community, another headman, a community. No. For instance, I come from Mzimela Traditional Authority. There are 26 headmen. And if you define it in that line, it would mean you'll just deal with that traditional authority alone. That would be too small. 20 communities, if you define it in that way. In other words, up to 2030, you'll be dealing with only one tribe.
Yeah.
So I think you can do more, and let's believe the department can and is able to do more, rather than perhaps there could be another definition, not the one of a headman, because that one is too narrow. Thank you, Chairperson.
Why don't we take that attempt?
not want to raise a similar comment.
I mean, when the DG say that we are looking at addressing so many areas of the Islamia, so that you talk about the areas of the Islamia, not of communities, because one traditional media has got several communities divided in sections. Now you cannot treat a section and say to the next section that I'll see you in the next section.
I can understand both of you come from the rural areas, Limpopo, KwaZulu Natal, and you are very concerned about being left out. But why don't we say that we need to note the point that is raised and say that as we work on development targets and so on, we need to refine and improve so that indeed we speak to the kinds of issues that suggest these matters in the rural areas and the similar environment will be addressed. What I'm saying is that I know that we're battling with the Ministry of Monitoring and Evaluation, and they wanted to work on tangible targets and so on and so forth. Let us note the point and then try and see if we can improve the document. Yes,
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, the first one is just a general question. Taking into account the fact that in the public hearings that we were going throughout the country conducting in terms of traditional and Khoisan leadership bill, there were always individuals who were coming through raising issues about their disputes in terms of traditional leadership. I see here there's one objective that seeks to reduce the number of traditional leadership disputes and claims by March 2020. A general question would be, are we really, as a department, making inroads in terms of addressing disputes in terms of traditional leadership? That's one. Two, looking at the National House of Traditional Leaders, I think it's on page 90 on what I have in front of me. It talks about reducing the number of initiation deaths. I'm not sure whether that's the correct page or not. But the question that I want to raise is that I see no reference made in terms of the coming initiation bill. In terms of what would be considered in this financial year by the National House of Traditional Leaders. Is it deliberate that probably there's no need for them to be engaging on the bill, or the bill is not expected as soon as we think it would be? Taking into account the fact that deaths in terms of initiation happen every season when the circumcision time comes, be it in the Eastern Cape or anywhere else. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. The question of disputes, two questions, disputes, and the question of deaths that are linked to initiation.
In terms of whether we're making inroads, yes, we are making inroads in terms of disputes that are currently taking place. I've indicated that we have a commission that is currently also handling some of those disputes. But as we resolve them, others arise. And some of the people go to court and so on. But as far as the attempts that are being made, we are indeed making inroads. Hence, we want to institutionalize
the process after the commission's term has come when it comes to an end in December 2017, and the initiation deck, the bill is, why are we not mentioning it? No, we are quite aware it is in the operational plan. For example, as we were deliberating during planning sessions, we have found that if you put a bill in your APP, you have no control over the processes. You can't even put time frames that when it will be approved, when it will be finalized. That is why we have not even put in the traditional and coercion deal, because it's no longer in our control. So we put those things in the APP, that all the deals, because the process beyond the department, we can't put the timeline to say they'll finalize it on this and that. But we'll put it in our operational plan to track it, yeah.
The depth?
That's the depth. I think the question was that in the absence of the deal and so on. So I'm trying to explain, because in the deal has got provisions that are going to help us to make successful prosecution, and they were still pushing it. It's still on course. I reported on it in the last PC. So it's just a textile thing that we don't have control on the processes of the bills and the legislation. We put it on the operational plan.
I guess this question really of the depth led to the concerns that are there. In the public in general, that the number of deaths are too high, especially in the Eastern Cape. I read an article in one of the newspapers recently. I think Eastern Cape stood at 199. And all the other provinces were at 10 and below. 199 is too big a figure. There's a need there to reassure communities that these battles are receiving urgent attention, and that these figures, in some sense, giving sense that these figures are really expected to go down. I know that there's a fair amount of work that the department is doing. I'm just saying that concern there will remain, especially in the relation to the Eastern Cape. Of course, one death is one too many. They shouldn't be having people die as they go through the transition passage. Okay. Can we say that this is where we stop, not unless there are additional matters that we want to raise. I was looking at my time here, it's almost half past 12. I'm sure it's half past 12 by now. I'm watching the clock behind. And perhaps just to say in summary that there are matters that we need to follow up. And these include, amongst others, the question of provinces. The chairperson of the committee has in the past indicated how we should take this matter forward. And his suggestion was more or less that we have to spend a bit of time clarifying this issue a bit further, but he did acknowledge in his comments that this is one specific issue that requires some attention by the committee. So it's a matter that I think we need to come back to. The second issue is. The question of money owed to municipalities. I think we're saying here that we need to have a report on this matter.
sure the department can organize a high level summary report that we can engage with in the near future, so that we have a sense of what is it that is being done to address this this problem. It's a problem that is there in relation to municipalities for many years. So we need to have a discussion on that. The question of corruption, I think, was addressed. Let's please make information available to the minister and allow the minister to pursue these matters. The more complete the information is, the better. But sometimes, of course, I know that the issue of corruption is a very serious matter. I'm sure many of us here, almost all of us, are in agreement with this. So it's a serious issue that requires urgent attention. But we need to aid the process by making available more information. The more concrete and better the information is, the more likely it is that we succeed in doing this anti-corruption work. I don't know if I'm not sure if the chairperson of the committee would like to make a comment or two. Okay. Yeah, it does seem as if there's some in-house matters that the committee will have to attend to after this meeting. So I'll ask members of the committee to remain. Yes. We suspend the...
Maybe on behalf of Costa Chair, once more let me take this opportunity to thank yourself and the team for allowing us to present this important document, but also make a special request that because the issues that you have referred to will require some scheduling by the committee, because if we don't schedule them, next year we'll be talking about the same issue, especially this discussion around our role in as far as cooperative governance is concerned at a provincial. It might be at a provincial, but it can also be extended to be national, because that's how central is this particular ministry. So it will be important for us to schedule those issues so as we are able then to be accorded an opportunity to present our submission to the committee. But once more, thank you very much for all the inputs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. The Secretary has noted the point. Meeting is about the adjourned.